Welcome. This is the podcast of Care Austria with Andrea Barstorff-Hager.
Welcome to the podcast of Care Austria. Today, I know I say it very often, I have again a very special guest. Her name is Gabriella Cihan-Stanley. So welcome, Gabs. May I call you Gabs?
Yes.
Because I saw it in all the papers that you call yourself Gabs.
I think people know me more as Gabs than Gabriella. I always tell people, don't call me Gabriella because that's a name by my grandmother used to call me when I misbehaved.
Okay, so welcome Gabs to Care Austria. And like always, I will introduce our guest of today briefly. Gabriella, as an award-winning XR director and producer, she serves as a significant pillar in the Austrian XR community. Let me mention what XR means for all the listeners who maybe are not aware what we are talking about. Today, we talk about virtual reality. Extended reality is XR, to be precise. She is the co-founder of Frisch, one of Austria's most recognized and prestigious studios dedicated to applied immersive entertainment, and the founder of XR Vienna, the largest XR community in Austria. And I'm really looking forward to our 40 minutes or so of conversation, because I myself, I'm very passionate about XR. I like it very much, to be very honest with you.
Oh, yes, wonderful.
And I'm really looking forward to our conversation. So I wouldn't say that it is something exotic or something that nobody knows about. I would say, especially in combination with all the talking about artificial intelligence and all the progress that we have been seeing in the last 2 years, the broader audience, these things have been there for many, many years. But for us as broader user audience, I would say it is really in the focus for 2 years, 3 years, something like that. And you are a professional in XR. So you didn't plan to become that as a child, I assume, right?
Not really. I didn't know this was going to exist as an option before. But first of all, thank you so much for having me here. It's really a pleasure to share what I know. And I hopefully it can help many others to implement XR meaningfully, which is my main goal through my work. And as you rightfully said, I never imagined that I was going to end up in technology in this context, right? I mean, I've always had the passion for technology because my father is a tech geek, no? Okay. He loves everything related to technology. And I grew up with him and my grandmother. And my dad was actually the first one in Paraguay, in the history of Paraguay, who won the custody of a little girl. Because my parents got divorced. So I have a lot of my father in me and my grandmother because of that. So our father-daughter meetings usually happened at places like Radio Shack back in the days. And he was claiming like, this cable is, you know, does this and does that. And I was so fascinated by how versatile technology could be and how much you could adapt it to so many different things. And it was always exciting, right? So besides that, and my passion for theme parks, also inculcated by my family, they're all adrenaline seekers. And all this was the brew, pretty much. For one day, I was watching Star Trek The Next Generation, and I saw the holodeck for the first time. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the holodeck.
Not really.
But Star Trek has always been recognized for for the technological advancements, and it's always like inspiring for some technologists like me right now. And the holodeck is a room that can produce any kind of simulation.
Okay.
So they were using these rooms for practicing their strategies when they had to go into battle, for example, or they could practice talking to someone because they were too shy. I mean, it was a room to live adventures or fall in love even. I mean, it was this magical room. And I couldn't stop thinking about it. I was like, wow, a holodeck, how cool, no? And this was the first VR system that teased my imagination. I thought, why not? This will be happening in the future. And what would that mean? And especially, what would that mean in a meaningful way? Because this is where my human context comes into play. Like, I never thought that I was going to be, for lack of a better word, allowed to follow a technological career because I live in a very patriarchal society. Mm-hmm. I mean, back in the days, right? I mean,
you were born and raised in Paraguay, exactly. In the capital, in Asunción.
In Asunción,
yeah.
Exactly.
And I mean, you might have heard it because you have been living for more than 10 years now in Austria.
And it, right? 10 years, yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
That in Austria, we have a lot of conversations about how we can attract girls to the so-called MINT subjects, yes, at university. Because until today, girls shy away from MINT.
Yes, absolutely.
And this is really a tragedy somehow. And your story fits nicely into what we would like to see here, that when girls are exposed to also the miracles of technology right from beginning, right from, yes, the start, and it's a natural thing for them, mm-hmm, then their interest also naturally grows. And maybe they are more brave to take such a career.
Absolutely. I mean, one thing that I see here in Austria that I didn't have the chance to experience in Paraguay is I had to force myself into kind of find this career path, mm-hmm, despite everything that happened in my surroundings, right? I mean, it was almost like an activism to be able to pursue the career that I wanted. So one had to be very strategic, right? I mean, like, you had to start with a humanist career and then maybe from there going around, mm-hmm, and maybe some design, maybe something that didn't say too obvious that you were pursuing a career in technology. But the moment I came here, I thought, wow, how easy it is. I mean, how easy it is, like, it's not easy, it's not yet easy, but how much acceptance there, mm-hmm, is if a woman or a girl, mm-hmm, says, I want to pursue a technological career. No, and it's also seen as a bigger picture of what technology means, because technology is not just a technical person, but it's also someone that acts like an interpreter between, mm-hmm, human experience and technology.
And that's exactly why you talk so much about meaningful virtual, yes, reality, because most of the people, at least that I know, are engaged with virtual reality for gambling, which is nothing wrong, mm-hmm, with it. But there is so much more to do, right?
I absolutely. I mean, we are inviting people to live a different reality, right? Mm-hmm. An alter reality, so to say. So why, like, it's so difficult to create this world, right? In a way that our brains can actually believe that we're there. Mm-hmm. So the cause has to be very special as well, because if we're just bringing people for the wow, then it's just a gimmick.
The wow is not lasting for long. That's exactly. Really true. Yeah. That's really true, because I'm really strategically looking for attractive VR programs, and there are not so many.
Yeah, it's a combination of challenges that we have to, yeah, overcome. I mean, first of all, there's a discrepancy between what one sees in advertising, mm-hmm, and what is the reality of the technology. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of, it's happening now with AI, for example. And it's like, yeah, AI is going to cut all the jobs and it's going to reduce the amount of hours for you to do this and this and, mm-hmm, that. But in reality, I mean, this is not the case in reality, or at least not yet. No? So, it's not cutting hours for any of us, because what it does is we have to learn how to use this technology first, which means overtime, mm-hmm, right? For anyone that is using this technology.
And it's more than learning by doing and experimenting a little bit, because then it doesn't work and then you turn away from it and you say, this is rubbish. I don't need it.
Exactly.
I have read in the newspaper today that more than half of the people, mm-hmm, are denying, mm-hmm, in Central Europe to use artificial intelligence because they think they don't need it without even looking at it. Mm. And talking about all the fears and all the negative things that you have to keep an eye on, mm-hmm, with every progress that we make, I would say. But I think it's not the best approach to start only with the negative side of things.
No, absolutely.
In order to embrace it, mm-hmm, and to see how can it help me. Because from where I'm sitting and where I'm working, I would say, and we are only scratching at a small, small part of artificial intelligence. It's like a booster.
Yes.
It can help us. it's like a booster, and I'm not so much afraid that it will replace me, but I'm eager to embrace it, to be boosted.
Absolutely.
And a little bit, it is also, I think, the same with virtual reality, because yes, I have read so much about it before. Yeah. Then I went to every museum where you could have access to it and tried it. Mm-hmm. And then last year I went and bought, I'm not a very famous headset, which was new last year. And then it was completely different, because then I really knew much better what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. As soon as you can try it.
Absolutely.
Then it opens new worlds. And not everything is positive, but I would say, and I loved something, you said it, I don't know, in an interview or somewhere I read it, you're not creating experiences, but memories.
Exactly.
And this is really what I would sign to.
Absolutely. I mean, like, we are creating, I when I started using VR, for me, what was interesting about it is that I was having dreams about the experiences that, mm-hmm. that I was experiencing. Mm-hmm. No, the experience is like the word, no? That I couldn't differentiate it between a memory mm-hmm. and an experience. Mm-hmm. And I thought, how powerful is this? And how much responsibility one has as a creator in order to create meaningful experiences. And this is why, like, when it comes to both, especially when I think about the future, no, the mm-hmm. combination between virtual reality and intelligent technologies, mm-hmm. that this is something that we're trying to reproduce a reality that we don't yet fully understand. And this comes with implications, but especially it comes with the responsibility and the intention of the developers to actually assess these risks and opportunities and make it meaningful and make it safe.
It, right?
And balance it, exactly. Mm-hmm. Balance the wow and the why, I always say.
Yeah, that's a good thing. I like that one.
Yeah.
You said that you loved theme parks, so in Austria, and you have done a quite nice, virtual reality for the Wiener Prater, which is really an institution. I looked at it. It was even a bit spooky, I have to say. And I'm sure when you look at it through the headset, then it's even more spooky, huh? Because the headset experience is that you are in the middle of something.
Yes.
You can be on top of Mount Everest. You can be at the Barrier Reef. You can be in a concert with Sting, whatever you want. And you are really there. And yes, you mentioned the theme parks.
Yes.
And the roller coaster. You can try it in virtual reality, because most of us have tried it in real life.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think you really have this experience thing, you can understand it better, because there are some which are that good mm-hmm. that you really feel like in a roller coaster and you're only sitting at home in your chair.
That's true.
Not all of them, but some of them really create the same motion, the same sickness in the stomach, everything you want to scream.
Yes.
But you only are with your headset. Isn't that fantastic? Of course, we don't oversee here all the negative sides of it. But somehow it is also magic, isn't it?
It's magic, and it's also something new for our human experience. And this is very exciting about the technology itself, because I imagine, for example, like the first time that someone could ride a horse, for example, mm-hmm. like we didn't know how fast we could go until we were riding a horse. And then the first car, no, I was like, wow, okay, we can go faster than a horse. And we progressively learn how much we could travel, or how far we could travel, how fast we could, all these things, right? So I think VR also gives us the opportunity to experience this magic, but also teaching us a new aspect of ourselves that we didn't even know we had.
Mm-hmm. And being in a safe space, right?
Exactly.
Because nowadays you can test drive electric car.
Yes.
And you can drive 250, which you never should do in real life when you're not a professional car tester.
Mm-hmm.
And you could do it. You and me, we could do it in virtual mm-hmm. reality, and it would be safe.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, this is why it's very good for training, mm-hmm. Virtual reality, because first of all, you have your own pace to train whatever you want.
You can repeat as many times as you need or
exactly.
want. Right?
And you're not affecting anyone else in the mm-hmm. process. And this is something that adds, imagine if you have to make an emergency training, for example, mm-hmm. for first responders.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how are you going to do that, like, as frequent as you needed to mm-hmm. in order for the first responders to have as much information mm-hmm. or experience as they can in order to help others?
Mm-hmm.
So this is what I like about virtual reality, that I always say to people, I'm not a fast thinker, but I'm a slow thinker, but I go very deep. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's not about the speed.
Take the deep dives.
Exactly. So I go very slowly, but I go very, very deep.
That's one of the buzzwords of the last 24 months, I would say. I did it up and down. We take a deep dive into this and that. I really like that.
Oh, wow.
So you're a deep diver.
I'm a deep diver, yeah. With the pressure submarine going down.
When was your first time that you experienced extended reality?
It was in 2012, 2013. I'm not sure anymore. But it was really in the most like a trivial way that actually I was working at media agencies back then, because this is
in
Spain. Mm-hmm. And I was developing, together with my team, we were developing a cruise ship tour. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, I mean, the first time it was really with these Google cardboards, mm-hmm. no? The cardboards are nothing compared to what we have now. And even so, my brain was completely convinced that I was inside the ship. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, look at this. I can look around. I can look up and down. And for me, it was the start of a new language. Mm-hmm. It was like learning a language, because your brain is also adapting to the technology. And every time you go into VR, it's like a level up.
Yeah, that's true. It gets easier and easier.
Exactly. Or you expect certain things, which is great for us developers, for example, because that gives us the creativity to say, okay, you know, like people are using this technology for long enough to understand that they don't want controllers anymore, for example. They want to use hand gestures.
Mm-hmm. And what does it mean? Nowadays it's possible.
Exactly. Nowadays it's possible. And it's even sometimes recommended, because we don't go around life with controllers, right? We experience life through our senses, through our eyes, through our touch, through our... And there's even really interesting solutions coming out now that are sense gloves, for example, that are sending the electrical signals to our brains without us touching anything, for our brain to believe that we're touching something.
Is this for the mixed reality thing?
You can use it for mixed reality, for virtual reality. It was actually a product, I don't remember now the name, but it was winning the best innovation at the CES this year.
Can you explain what CES is?
Sorry.
Because we are not a tech podcast in particular.
Yeah, of course.
So we have to explain a bit more.
It's the biggest conference of consumer electronics in the world. Mm-hmm. And whatever gets awarded there, then it's something that is going to influence the future one way or another. Mm-hmm. So in this context, there was this this project that was a haptic glove. That's how it's called, like in the technological terms, let's say. And it was a device that was developed together with neuroscientists. And I found this fascinating, because this is the part of my job that I'm really striving to push the limits on. How we can actually merge industries in order to be more than the sum of our parts. Because a technologist alone, can create technology. But what is the context of this technology? Who is it going to benefit? How are we sure that this is going to be producing the impact that we're expecting? Mm-hmm. So when I see projects like this, or for example, there's Inner World is called another project that is counselors getting together in a safe space in the metaverse to get, let's say, indirect counseling. Because sometimes the first step is to actually want to meet someone to actually get the therapy that we need. And this is very hard when one doesn't know what the other person, who the other person is going to be, who's going to receive you on the other side. So having the virtual environment as a first step, as a protection layer to say, I'm my avatar and I'm behind this reality wall that is actually protecting me anytime that I want to pull the plug on my experience.
You can do that easily.
Exactly. Yeah. So this is something that we couldn't experience before. And this is what I say about the language. Right? We are creating a new language to talk to one another as humans. Mm-hmm. And this is very exciting.
Yeah, that's really exciting. And some scientists foresee that we will have a stronger combination of analog and digital world. Do you believe that too?
The digital world, as they call it. Absolutely. Because, of course, we grow up in a physical world. We touch things, we see things, we smell things, we experience things. And our body develops because of these external stimuli that we have. So virtual reality, I always say that virtual reality is not a replacement, but it's an enhancement.
Mm-hmm.
So our bodies are going to keep doing what our bodies do, mm-hmm. because that's what we need to function. No?
These are the physical reactions that we might feel when we experience something in virtual reality.
Exactly. And virtual reality would be, let's say, either we're doing something impossible or we're doing something that is... dangerous, impossible, expensive, or remote?
Mm-hmm.
I think it was
That's very true. I was at the top of Mount Everest.
Yeah, this is incredible.
I was in Nepal for my work. I saw it from far. I never thought of climbing it up. I was in virtual reality. I was at the top of Mount Everest, and I was freezing like hell on my sofa at home. But this is also something that might be enough, not for everybody. It will replace the real life experience of climbing up Mount Everest. But when we look at the negative impact of thousands of climbers mm-hmm. and the negative pollution impact it has and the many lives yeah. that are lost of people that are not trained well enough to climb up the Mount Everest, mm-hmm. for some of them, it might be the better option.
Absolutely.
And for the pollution of our environment, it might be the better option anyhow.
Mm-hmm.
Even knowing that virtual reality consumes a lot of energy. I mean, this is true. You need a lot of electricity and it's also not climate neutral, but it is much less than going to Nepal, hire 3 Sherpas and climb up the Mount Everest.
That's true.
And also for people who might not have had the opportunity when they were young, mm-hmm. they could do it now with virtual reality.
Absolutely.
At any age, to be very honest. So I thought this might be really a good step for everybody. It's not only for young people.
No. I mean, it opens a path for understanding sometimes. And this is something that goes beyond generations, right? I mean, we all want to understand how things work, or we want to understand what it feels like to do something. And sometimes we're limited either by resources or by age or just by the time that we were born in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that virtual reality is actually helping us access these things. So mm-hmm. this is why through my work, for example, I always say I help people learn, understand, and have fun.
Mm-hmm.
Because we do learn about our reality in a different way that is richer in some cases, and it also helps us understand the capabilities of our own mind, of mm-hmm. our own body. So it's really exciting to see that this transcends age, right? Because actually we created some experiences that were actually just directed to people who have never tried technology.
Mm-hmm.
Like how do you introduce people to virtual reality if what they know is how to use a phone?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it is a conversation that you're doing with your user saying, okay, I will pick you up from where you're at the moment, and not imposing technology, but inviting the use of technology. Mm-hmm. And that requires a progressive introduction.
Because the user journey is not that difficult, I have to say.
No.
You need not be an expert.
No, exactly. I mean, it's very intuitive so far as the technology is nowadays.
So. Yeah.
It's very intuitive. But of course, the headsets can be lighter, but this is happening really fast. I mean, if we look at, I started working in VR with my own company in 2016, and I still had to have my headset tethered to a computer. Mm-hmm. I still had glitches. I still had very high latency. I mean, they were all things that you had to imagine a lot of things. And now I can just have my headset in my backpack and go anywhere.
Yeah, but you had this evolution.
Yes.
The normal user, the average consumer user,
mm-hmm.
doesn't have this evolution that you have. Because I know it, that in former times you needed a computer and everything mm-hmm. to connect with it. With the new, I can say with the new Meta Quest 3,
yes.
you need nothing. You have the goggles and
exactly.
that's it. You don't need a computer, you need nothing. It's really like magic. Yeah?
Exactly. Yeah.
On the other hand, if you start the journey with MetaQuest 3, which is already quite a level,
mm-hmm.
and then after 2 hours you think, my neck in the back, it
yes.
is heavy. Yeah, it's not heavy, but if you wear it for hours, it mm-hmm. is quite a challenge. It does not look good.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how much you enjoy the virtual reality, you look like a nerd somehow.
The hair is always
everything is gone. In summertime, it's super hot. So even today in the standard, marketing professor said that Apple brought out these headsets, the professional headsets, which costs a fortune. And he said now the product is gone because it's not selling simply. So will this be solved, this problem of the headset, of the ugly goggles somehow? Is, because this is the price you have to pay if you want to.
Absolutely.
If you want to experience virtual reality.
Now, this is a big obstacle. Not obstacle. I wouldn't say obstacle because you can still develop experiences that are really engaging. But as you said, there's a rite of passage to go to this experience because the headsets are not too comfortable sometimes. It depends on the hairstyle that you have or your endurance.
It's hot.
Exactly. The batteries are sometimes not lasting too long, so you have to have an external battery source and so on and so forth.
And in pandemic times, when I went to the museums where they all have it now, I really was thinking, how do they clean it?
I mean,
in order to really make sure that you don't catch anything.
Absolutely.
It's not the most hygienic thing, I would say, to share it with people you have never met in your life, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, luckily, there are companies now that specialize only in cleaning these headsets. Like you put it like when you go to a hairdresser and you see this machine to disinfect things.
It's a similar thing.
Okay. And you press a button, you put the headset inside, you press a button, and then in 1 minute it's completely clean.
That's good to hear because I was really worried sometimes.
And you should.
Because it's really something quite...
It's there in your face.
No?
It's literally in your face.
It's in your face, literally.
Absolutely. I mean, a lot of things are happening from the technology side that are evolving the comfort of the immersive technologies. Like one, for example, if you compare the newest generation of the headsets that are currently out in the market, they are, except the Vision Pro, they're a lot lighter.
Yes, they are.
For example, the battery lasts for a longer time. You have more configuration options. Like, for example, the eye distance was always an issue for me because my eyes are too close together. So I either had to compromise between seeing blurry or not.
You can even use them with glasses.
Exactly. Now you can use
it
even with glasses.
That's really good.
It's always the technology is still, I mean, you always need these first adopters of a certain generation of technology in order to push the technology forward. We're never going to have the perfect technology the same way that we still don't have the perfect mobile phone. No, it's still evolving, right?
It's always a compromise.
Exactly. So there's always a compromise. I mean, for me, what's interesting for the future is to know what the balance of this compromise would mean. No, I mean, like, why? And this is again linked to the content that we're producing. How meaningful are the contents enough to invite your users to put a headset on their faces and to be able to see this?
Do you have numbers how many people experience VR in the Austrian population?
Yeah, to be honest, this is a bit tricky to calculate because a lot of experiences are B2B. So this information is not usually disclosed unless you're the marketing department of this institution.
So you did something for the Wildnispark in Dürnstein. I looked at that one. It's really nice. And all the visitors in the end
are trying the experiences.
And this you can't calculate.
Exactly. This was since the beginning of the experience until now, there were 75,000 people trying the experiences. That's quite a lot, and especially because we're still in contact with them. We're updating the experiences from time to time. And they also say that, especially for first timers, like feeling that they are a bird, like an owl flying on top of the mountains. I mean, for us that we see VR every day, it's like, another flight. But it's such a magical moment.
It's really magical.
That you see people holding onto the rails, to the front, because you can't believe you're flying. No, so this is all we're all about. You know, we love to open this path of curiosity, of understanding. I mean, I hope it's okay that I say this, but I don't believe that VR is an empathy machine as it's being advertised. Like you hear talks saying like, it's the ultimate empathy machine. I believe that it opens a path for understanding and curiosity, which is the first step of empathy, you know, because I believe, I mean, you would know better than me about this topic, right? But it's someone that doesn't have empathy. I highly doubt that VR is going to give them the empathy they need to understand a certain situation.
Yeah.
But it will open a path of curiosity mm-hmm. and a path of understanding that they would want to know more. And sometimes this is more effective than expecting everyone to be in someone else's shoes.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I would say it has a big component of entertainment. Also, infotainment, if you want, depending on what you watch.
Mm-hmm.
It can also help you to be much more agile than people in their 70s or 80s. I mean, they would not do many things that they could do if they would be able to use virtual reality. I think, mm-hmm. especially for those, it might really be a game changer.
Absolutely.
Looking at the radius that gets smaller and smaller when you age.
Mm-hmm. There's one example that one example that I had the privilege of working on that was we flew to Lebanon to a refugee camp. That was mainly comprised of women and children,
mm-hmm.
right? And when one sees it on the news, you know, there was a Syrian refugee. He was a musician, and he told me once, "Before I used to be a musician, and now I'm just a number."
Mm-hmm.
No? So, how can virtual reality assist on this? How can we mm-hmm. see people mm-hmm. beyond the stats and numbers? And this is what I felt when we went to Lebanon and we sat down in front of these women and children and just asked them, you know, like, what are your ambitions in life? What is your, what are your hopes and dreams? You know, what are your challenges? And really in VR, you sit people in front of them and it's like, okay, eye to eye, no stats, no numbers, no, it's just a conversation between two humans. And when you hear, I don't know, a child saying like, mm-hmm. what is your dream? And says, I want to have a lot of potatoes, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, you understand more than just the stats and numbers.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So this is what I mean by opening a path of curiosity and understanding. Mm-hmm. Because you if you don't feel anything just by mm-hmm. listening to someone saying this, you won't feel it in VR.
Yeah,
but
that's true.
At the same time, if you know, if you're curious about why a person would be saying something like this, you would inform yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And information is power. Information is knowledge.
Absolutely. And in our case, in the case of the humanitarian work of care, it would enable us to show many more aspects to a bigger number of people, because it's not easy to go and visit a project somewhere in the world. Firsthand, it is expensive. It is very dangerous to most of the regions. We are not allowed to bring any visitors because mm-hmm. it's simply too dangerous. And with a VR solution, at least you can have much more than the normal idea of what is going on. So this is something that I'm really looking at for our future communication work,
mm-hmm.
because you can meet people in VR and you have your brain has the idea that you sit now vis-a-vis mm-hmm. this person.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And all the people are looking at Paris now, and there is an excellent VR production about Notre Dame, the mm-hmm. rebuilding of Notre Dame. And I was experiencing that, and out of the blue, you fly over the roof, you sit at the water fountain on top of Paris. It's really beautiful. And out of the blue, I sat very formal in my chair. And my husband said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm talking to the mayor of Paris." Because nice. She was sitting there, Hidalgo was sitting there and explaining wow. why you should donate for the reconstruction of Notre Dame
mm-hmm.
in a very formal way. And you experience it then as
a 101.
Not 100%, but I would say 70 to 80, which is not bad.
Absolutely.
In comparison to reading that she writes me a letter to donate something for the reconstruction of Notre Dame, right?
But this is very interesting what you're saying right now, because we were talking about the filter for braving up a person mm-hmm. to go into therapy, for example. Mm-hmm. But in this case, it's actually doing the opposite, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it's removing the mm-hmm. barrier that you have or the artificialness,
mm-hmm.
so to say, for a person to have a conversation with someone mm-hmm. else. So this in itself shows like how versatile virtual reality can be and how much is linked to your intentions.
Absolutely. So right? You can really target different audiences with.
Exactly.
I think it will be very, somehow it seems quite far away that really also in a rich country like Austria or Spain or in the European Union, I mean, many people have experienced it sometimes. Some have the device even at home, but I don't think that the majority has the device at home. Maybe their kids have, but many also of my staff here, they say, my kids have it, I never looked at it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what, how do you plan with such a company to involve more of regular, normal audiences to mm-hmm. get appetite for VR?
Well, what I'm doing right now, I mean, we have been doing it for quite some time, no? Is not acting as if we come from the future.
Yeah. Like, it's already like begun. The future is here.
Exactly. Yeah. The future is here. And the future is us as people. It's not something intangible. It's not something that actually only a few of us see it and then the rest not. And I think this is as much of humanity that we see through the experiences, the more adoption we're going to see. And for that to happen, we need to understand that it's a progressive journey mm-hmm. and not just from 0 to 1 and then 2. I mean, it's something that has to grow together with the understanding of humans. And the more we actually create opportunities, for example, I can tell you about something that we are working on right now, because we see immersive technologies as the final point of this project. But you were mentioning memories, for example. So what does it mean to leave a legacy, right? I mean, what does it mean to actually know what our memories represent in the whole picture of our lives? How can we understand where we are today mm-hmm. from where we come from or our experiences in life? And how is this connected to others? How is this connected? Mm-hmm. So what we're working right now is on, it's actually artificial intelligence, so it has, mm-hmm. has nothing to do with VR yet, but it's a coach, like experience that is actually helping you trigger the right questions to yourself to document your memories and to link them with one another. So by linking your past, you understand your present, and you can also have an understanding of what your future looks like. And you either appreciate the future that you're living, that sometimes is very difficult for us to understand. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is a difference that I'm making in the world, because we always want to do more and mm-hmm. do better. And or sometimes we say, I think I was wasting a bit of time in my life. You know, I might do something mm-hmm. better or more productive mm-hmm. about my life. And of course, in conjunction with others. So where does VR come into this? Like, we want people to be able to experience walking around their memories.
Okay.
And actually having a non-linear way to explore what their legacy means.
Mm-hmm.
And give this someday to someone. Like, for example, I would do this with my daughter to say, mm-hmm. look, this is a time capsule of my memories, my life, and you can explore it as you want. And probably she's going to use it differently than I did, but it's going to be a repository of my memories.
And you will still be around even in times when you might not be around any longer.
Exactly.
Which is something which is really philosophically debated by many scientists who mm-hmm. some think it's a good idea that I saw it that in China, for instance, all these commemorial traditions are changing completely. That even at a cemetery, you can have a stick with the memories of
yes.
the person that you bury there,
mm-hmm.
and then you have a big screen at the cemetery. Put the USB in, and then the person talks to you.
Yes.
And some think this is spooky, but on the other hand, as you described it now, it might be a wonderful legacy. It's much more than a book or a letter or something that really interacts with the people that come after us.
No, absolutely. Or sometimes we don't know how to document our memories.
Yeah.
I mean,
because we always do it in a linear thing, in
exactly.
a linear way. And this enables us to do it from different approaches.
Exactly. And we don't need to be writers, no?
Yeah.
We don't need to be writers or photographers or anything of the sort. It's just triggering the right memories and having technology on your side
mm-hmm.
to be able to translate what it means to you
mm-hmm.
into a format that can be usable in technology to be able to transmit your message onto others. Mm-hmm. So technology is a mediator between the outside world and yourself.
This might really be also something that might be applicable to some of the audiences that CARE is working for and with globally, because to connect one with the other, this might be really a good technological bridge. So we will talk about that outside of this podcast.
Okay.
So the last point that I want to touch with you is that you're really engaged in bringing more women to use also to technology, right?
Absolutely.
How do you do that, Gabs?
Well, I'm actually the country ambassador of Women in Immersive Technologies Europe, mm-hmm. which is an international organization that empowers female representation in tech industries.
Mm-hmm.
And
which are the strongest countries in Europe when it comes to immersive?
There's the Netherlands,
mm-hmm.
for example. They are quite strong when it comes to immersive technologies. Mm-hmm. There's France. There's Germany has a very big market as well. And these are the main ones,
mm-hmm.
I would say. I mean, in Austria, we're still growing the market. And in some ways, the advantage that we have here, for example, is that there's funding for it. So okay. There are a lot of things that we can actually try out via funding that doesn't mm-hmm. necessarily mean that we have to, you know, have someone mm-hmm. Investing in the project, which is great. Mm-hmm. But these countries are the strongest ones. But still in these strong countries, there's not enough women representation on these projects or in this industry as a whole. And my personal conviction is that it's also a matter of context, because we are seeing only a technological aspect of mm-hmm. immersive technologies, but we don't see the facilitation that happens for this technology to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And this, I see so many women working on this, whether that means in concepts, whether that means in information technology, whether mm-hmm. that means in the research that goes into these experiences in order to be ethical, to be safe, mm-hmm. to be effective. And all this, actually, there's more women than men working mm-hmm. in this aspect of the technology. So I see this as a huge opportunity to actually use technology in a more holistic, richer experience, because we are involving male and female and everything in between. And we are involving humanity as a whole and not just one perspective of it or another. And it's easier to be said than done, because with women in immersive tech, every community in different countries, they all have their main challenge. Like, for example, for me here in Austria is actually creating the community, because there wasn't any community at all.
Mm-hmm.
And
how large is this community in numbers? How many members do you have?
Right now, there's around 20,000 women around the world. And the latest chapter is actually extending beyond mm-hmm. Europe. We have one chapter in Dubai mm-hmm. now, for example, and one in South America about to
be open.
And in Austria, I'm me, myself, and I trying to grow the community. but we actually had our first event not so long ago, just a get to know community. And we're around 13, 15, women developing. I mean, not only developing, but there's researchers, there's women working actively mm-hmm. in the industry, whether in concept creation or in technical skills. So, but we're growing, and this is exciting, because back then in 2015, when I created the XR community here, we started with 20 people and now we're 1,300. And it started out of a curiosity to see who else is out there, what do they know, and how we can combine our superpowers to be more than the sum of our parts.
This is absolutely interesting, because this is exactly what CARE is doing worldwide, not in the tech field, but we motivate women and girls around the globe to unite, to meet at hubs and to do saving and loan groups, to get more education, many, many things, to know their rights. Nice. And it would be one of my personal dreams somehow that we could also include opening a bit of this tech cosmos, which is global
mm-hmm.
and which, in my opinion, will divide the world again, not only in the rich and the poor, but those who are literate in all these tech tools and those who are not.
Absolutely.
And I think if CARE is taking a very holistic approach to development, which from my point of view is really important to look at it holistically. Mm-hmm. So we should also include some aspects of drawing women and girls also being able to deal with some of the new digital tools, and also including a bit of virtual reality and what interests people. It's not us who decides that, but really to enable, really to benefit from everything that is out there. There's a lot, right?
Absolutely. It reminds me of, I was reading a book about consciousness, actually. Mm-hmm. Nothing to do with VR. Well, it has to do with VR, because in the end, we're dealing with consciousness as well. But virtual reality, I mean, especially in the context of women and girls, you know? I mean, we can be told what it's like to be someone. We can be told what it's like to feel certain things. But it would always be an approximation of what this person is actually experiencing. So actually, virtual reality is bringing us closer to this, what it's like to be, experience, become a certain person.
Absolutely.
And I think this is something that we are just scratching the surface of what would be possible. And I think it's an opportunity for us to actually understand how humanity thinks on a different perspective than our own.
Mm-hmm. And to draw down some barriers, right?
Absolutely.
So we are all curious for the future. I hope our listeners are too, to see what will come. I thank you, Gabs, that you took your time, and thank you for this lovely podcast.
Yes, thank you for the opportunity, Andrea. And it was great. And then I hope, I wish you all the best as well in your future endeavors in VR. I hope you, I could open the path of curiosity as we were talking about. And thank you. Thank you again. All the best.
Thanks for listening. This was Care in Action, the podcast of Care Austria with Andrea Barstorff-Hager. For further information, go to care.at. Sponsored by CC Real.